Welcome to the 12th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America.
People who have frozen to death, people who have died of diseases that they shouldn't have died from, but couldn't get treated or were exacerbated by life on the streets or under harsh conditions. People who died because they couldn't afford to get medical care or the medical care they got in an emergency room was inadequate. And people who got beaten to death, people who froze to death. A lot of tragedy out there for homeless people, so we're going to light a candle for them. And we've just lit it on this desk here. I am speaking to you from Capass Christian, Mississippi. We are maybe, as the crow flies, 6 miles or so away from what the Army Corps of Engineers has designated as the official ground zero where Hurricane Katrina came ashore. A lot of people think Hurricane Katrina came ashore in New Orleans. Well, New Orleans certainly was hard hit, but that's because the levees broke, not because the storm went over it. Where we're speaking to you from, it's right in the zone where the storm just came and wiped out everything. In Pass Christian, where I'm speaking from, it wasn't as hard hit as Waveland, Mississippi, which is at ground zero. Here in Pass Christian, they only lost 100% of their public buildings, the police station, the mayor's office, the library. They only lost 100% of their businesses, the convenience stores, the restaurants, you name it. And they're better off than Waveland because they lost 80% of their housing instead of all of their housing. That's how badly these people have been hit. Now, if you're like me, I live in upstate New York. If you live somewhere around the country, you may think that, okay, it's been 3.5 years. The people on the Gulf Coast, they've all had plenty of time to recover. Surely things are all right down here. Well, it just ain't so. Things are not all right down here. People are in very bad shape, many of them. There still is a great struggle to go on. I heard a statistic that if they built 50 houses a day down here for 10 years, they would barely be caught up to what's been lost, and they're not building anything near that much. There are people still living in temporary housing that they're afraid that they're going to lose. So over the next 14 hours, we'll be talking about many topics having to do with the recovery effort down here, and some topics having to do with other forms of poverty and homelessness throughout the United States, which we have traditionally talked about on this broadcast every year. We're going to be taking your calls. We have 2 call-in numbers for this show. Anybody can call 877-NOBODY-8, 877-NOBODY-8. But if you're homeless or formerly homeless or afraid you're about to be homeless, if you're in a struggle, you can also call 866-LEFT-OUT. And have an extra chance to get through our board and have a chance to tell your story on the air, because we particularly want to hear from you. This is the story, this is the night for all the people who are struggling in the United States to finally have their voices be heard. Now, in this first hour, I am seated with a panel of people, all of whom are either in danger of losing their homes or were in danger of losing their homes up until 2 or 3 days ago when a reprieve came through from the federal government. I'm going to introduce them in just a second, but I want to give you a tiny bit of background about why people might be afraid of losing their homes during a period when they're trying to rebuild them. And the answer is that after Hurricane Katrina, there was a great deal of temporary housing given out. There were the infamous FEMA trailers, Federal Emergency Management Agency trailers, which then you may have read in the paper, turned out to be dangerous because they had formaldehyde in them, and some people suffered consequences with their respiratory system. Some people may have died because of it, though it's always hard to prove. And when the problems began to develop with the FEMA trailers, the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency, or MEMA, started building cottages. They kind of look like trailers, but they're a lot better built. And they also distributed those as temporary housing. Unfortunately, some of the MEMA cottages, too, have got formaldehyde problems. Why that's been such a sticky problem, well, it's not given to me to know why they couldn't do something about it. Up until a few days ago, both the MEMA cottages and the FEMA trailers were scheduled to be removed on March 1st. Now, they couldn't maybe pull all of them, but the same day there's several thousand of them both put together. But they were all going to be removed. The feeling was, well, the temporary housing has been here long enough, and communities didn't necessarily want them. And some communities gave the MEMA cottages, oh, maybe an extra 60 days or something. But the federal deadline still had a lot of people under the gun. This is a nonpartisan show, but I can tell you that policies have changed under the Obama administration. In the last few days, people in the FEMA trailers have gotten extensions till the end of August. What will happen then, I don't know. No one really knows, but we see a definite change in terms of trying to keep people in their housing while new housing is being built. Now, seated next to me, I have Sergeant Davis Kring, Dorothy McClendon, Nora Buganim, and Greg Lane, all of whom are in temporary housing and all of whom have been right on the verge of losing it. Welcome to all of you to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you.
Let me just go around and I'll get your stories in brief. Why don't I start to my immediate right? Sergeant Kring, you are in active duty. In what branch of the service?
I'm a National Guard, and I work as an active duty technician repairing military aircraft.
Okay. And if you'd speak right into the mic. And Sergeant, why were you in danger of losing your housing? What is your particular situation?
Our particular situation is we are in Ground Zero, Waveland.
Right.
And we lost everything. We were given a MEMA cottage while I was deployed overseas in Kuwait. And upon my return, I realized that we had a time deadline that we had to be out of the cottage. And we were told from the very beginning by our city council and aldermen that we would be able to purchase these things. And now they've tried to come up with all kinds of different stipulations and rules that, no, we're not going to allow the cottages within the city. And then they came around, finally saw our way of thinking that, okay, yes, these are modular homes.
And they were saying they were trailers and they didn't want trailers?
They were trailers that didn't want
and
trailers.
And had there never been a trailer in Waveland before?
Well, there'd been trailers, but not within the city limits because they have an ordinance.
Okay.
Well, if you take these off of the trailers that they're brought in as modular homes and put them on fixed foundations, they are modular homes. They are stronger than stick-built homes. And that's been the big argument all along. Now, they've kind of realized now that they're modular homes, so, okay, we're going to put these stipulations on them. A few of them being that you had to have the property prior to Katrina. You had to have homestead exemption on the property prior to Katrina. You had to be living in it at the time of Katrina. And it goes on to about 16 different counts, whereas a regular modular home, if you went out to purchase it from Palm Harbor, could be moved in there only requiring a zoning and a setback ordinance.
So you're saying that as a Katrina survivor who lost your house in Katrina, is that correct? So you're saying they made it harder on you than if somebody had just moved down from, well, who cares where, but somebody had moved down from Chicago and they wanted to buy a modular home, they could slap it up and they'd have an easier time than you would.
Yes, they would.
So, and this is a kind of universal experience down here, that the level of bureaucracy, rules, and regulations is stifling. Is that correct?
It's stifling is one way of putting it. Asinine.
Okay, we can say that on the radio. Folks, I've heard descriptions of what's going on down here from people that you can't say on the radio. I'd say most of what people have to say about the way they've been helped down here, you can't say on the radio. People are not happy down here, and it's quite an eye-opener. Now, Sergeant, you took matters into your own hands in the sense that you are suing. Tell us about your lawsuit.
Correct. We are with about eight other individuals, and we have sued the city of Waveland. We have gotten all kinds of negative and positive response to this. A lot of people how dare you sue the city? They don't understand we're not getting any monetary compensation out of this. We are simply suing to be able to stay on our property. The way that they approved these cottages, they approved them that we could keep them as long as we moved them to a trailer park, paid the current trailer park rate, paid their utilities, put our stuff in storage, paid for the homes or mortgages, and continue to pay our utilities and taxes on our property. You know, once again, it's asinine.
What sense does that make? You have to pay for the taxes on your property, but you're not allowed to live on it.
Correct.
Forced to live somewhere you don't even want to live.
Correct.
And you have to pay to live where you don't want to live, and then they'll let you stay.
So that's what started me off. Now, we've gotten the agreement that, yes, they're modular homes, but they have to meet these stipulations, and yes, they can stay in the city. So we're making headway, but I just don't understand why they couldn't have saved face, why they couldn't have saved themselves and done the right thing to begin with and said, you know what, we're going to step up, we're going to do the right thing. They can stay on a case-by-case situation where if you are in need of it, you can keep it.
But in any case, and you touched on this, people don't understand. There was a battle that went on maybe for 2 or 3 months about the legal definition of what a Mima cottage was. You had to prove that it was wasn't a trailer. Because heaven forfend, you'd have a trailer, some poor person struggling to survive. If it's defined as a trailer, you can't stay in it.
Well, yeah, and that's the Waveland City ordinance was intact on that even before Katrina, and I understand that, and that's not a problem. Like one gentleman came up not too long ago, and he was just all upset that a Mima cottage was going to depreciate his property values. And I looked at him. I said, okay, when are you planning on moving? He said, well, I'm not. I'm staying. I said, then what are you worried about? You're not going to sell it, so what are you worried about it devaluing any property? You're not paying as much tax.
If you could pass now the microphone over to Dorothy, and while Dorothy, we're going to get ready to speak to her, let me make this point to the people out there. We are near what we call the other ground zero. Kind of like they used to call pork the other white meat, but maybe a little more serious than that. I am a native New Yorker. I grew up in Manhattan, so I certainly, like all Americans, am sensitive to what happened there. But we launched, in response to that, two wars that are going to cost this nation well over a trillion, some say trillions of dollars in the end. And we really want to bring home the fact that we're near the ground zero here of another kind of disaster, a disaster that actually probably killed more people, although the actual death toll is not fully known, a disaster that that was the greatest national disaster in the history of this country. This is a ground zero, too. And as you listen to these stories, think to yourselves, did we give the response to this ground zero commensurate with the tragedy that happened here, the way we gave a big response to the ground zero in New York? Now, Dorothy, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, we're so happy to have you here. And please speak into the mic and don't look at me because I'm not that good looking. That's why I'm on radio, you know. Dorothy, tell the people your situation, please.
Well, my situation is that I am still presently living in a FEMA trailer. What has happened to me is that there were several phases of government money and grants that came to the coast to help people that received the surge. And I was one of the areas that was hit by the storm, but we received our damages from the wind. And somewhere up there in Washington, Jackson, they decided that the people that received the wind did not deserve any of the grant monies that people from the surge received. Now, keep in mind that I am disabled. I'm on a fixed income. My house actually shifted during the storm, which interfered with my gas line, so my house is unsafe to live in. It also took away my heating and air system, which I have no heat or air in the house. I also received water damages in the house. I didn't qualify for phase one or phase two of the properties because I'm on the north side of Highway 90, the beach, because I received wind damage, and it was determined that I was not eligible to receive any of this monies. Now, living on a fixed income, no way that I could afford to even start to begin to fix up my house. So that's how I ended up in the FEMA trailer. I'm still in the FEMA trailer. I was very worried because once they take that FEMA trailer away from me, which they have given me a 2-month extension, I would then be one of the homeless people out here where many are today because of the storm and the situation. I cannot move back into my house at this time unless I receive some help. That's where I would be once they take that FEMA trailer away.
Thank you, Dorothy. Now, just up until a few days ago when this new thing came down, you were afraid you had to move in a week.
Yes. I was very afraid. I was worried. I didn't know what I was going to do or where I was going to go. And even at this point, the extension of 2 months, that's still not enough time to really get my home repaired and to be able to move back in my home. So 2 months is still not enough time for me to get back into my home.
Could you share with us, if you don't mind, Dorothy, what could you tell us something about the nature of your disability, if it's not something too private that you could tell us?
I have what you call muscular dystrophy. I'm one of the Jerry kids,
okay.
The senior Jerry kids.
Okay, well, I guess everybody was a kid once, including myself. I'm coming up on my 60th birthday. I cannot stand it. I'm telling you, Dorothy, I want to go back, you know, but I'm not the first human being to feel this way. Yeah. And Dorothy, how much money do you get for your disability? You've obviously, I've talked to many people on disability. I know you don't just tell them, oh, I'm disabled. They make you go to the doctor. They check it out. How much money do you get from your disability?
I get $741 a month for my disability.
And so that's it, and that's what you have to live on?
That's what I have to live on.
And when you owned your own housing, and this is a point that I want the people to understand, because you're in a situation a lot of people are in, while your house was intact, you could afford to get by on that.
Yes, I could.
But on $741 a month, you can't afford to build a house.
And no, I cannot afford to build a house. I cannot even afford to get a decent roof on my house. And I was fortunate to have a faith-based organization that did do the roof on the house. But there are very, there's gas lines, there's plumbing problems, there's heating and air problems in there, which is takes a lot of money to fix, to even get to that stage to move in.
And you touched on another important point here, because I mean, this is all new to the people around the country. They don't really know anything of what's happened. So you've touched on something very important. A volunteer group, a church group, basically came in and helped you.
Yes.
And there is an estimate that 700,000 volunteers have come to Mississippi after Katrina. So the heart of the American people has been very good. But nonetheless, you're a disabled woman with a very limited income. And right now, is there any program out there at all that's going to get you into permanent housing that you know of?
There is no program to my knowledge. The phases of the government grant money excluded wind damage. It excluded people that was on fixed and low income that they cannot full coverage on the insurance. Basically, the governor has said that we are irresponsible because we have to make a choice to eat. We have to make a choice of taking our medicines. We have to make a choice to actually live from day to day. And we are penalized because of that. Everybody received damages in this storm, and everyone should be able to live in a safe and healthy environment and get help to move back into their home. You're increasing the homeless problem, not decreasing it. You're increasing it.
Thank you, Dorothy. And I'm going to move on in a moment now to Nora. But before I do, let me just make this comment, because we, on this broadcast, we deal with the more traditional kinds of homelessness usually. This is our first broadcast from the Hurricane Katrina zone. And even though the stereotypes are not true, you know, people are always told, oh, you're homeless because you got drunk. It's your own fault. Just Dorothy, for the record, are you responsible for Hurricane Katrina? Are you the one?
No, I am not responsible for Hurricane Katrina, and none of these people are responsible for the hurricane.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to make sure we had not accidentally gotten a panelist up here who was the one who had caused the hurricane, because if we had, well, we'd have to deal with that. But no, this has happened to people who were living okay, and they're just innocent. That's a point, America, that is really important to understand. People down here in Mississippi were leading their lives, and then a hurricane came, and they can't rebuild their lives. And you just heard from Dorothy that, you know, she could live before, and now there is no program there to get her back into housing. And this poses a question for the nation. Is this what we want? Is this what we want? Now, Nora, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
My story is a little bit different, okay?
You did bring on the hurricane.
No, I didn't bring it on, and I am a senior citizen. I have my own land, and I had my little savings. I had some lumber and some cement blocks and a new fence and stuff ready to frame me something to live in it like that, and then the storm came and took it out. I'm also on $647 a month Social Security. Mm-hmm. I had to go drive a school bus in order to be able to live and to eat. And that's what I'm doing now. And I make $629 a month with that. It's enough to pay my low bills and enough to survive on. But it's not enough to go and rent. The rent has went sky high since Katrina. That if you moved in one day and you stayed that month, the next month they'd be kicking you out because you couldn't afford to pay the rent.
Well, let me emphasize this point. Again, this is all new to everyone. I came down here, I had to learn all this stuff, and it's really a lot to take in. If anybody goes to any city in the United States and they want to go where the cheap housing is and get a cheap place, you go where the dilapidated old housing is. But after Katrina, all of that housing was gone. So there's no real low-cost housing. How much did it used to be to get the cheapest kind of rental in this area, and what is it now?
Well, you used to could get a small house, mm-hmm. like one or two bedrooms, for like $400 a month or $450. Nice apartments for $600. Mm-hmm. But now everything has jumped so sky high, and people has come from out of town, building up more and making the rent and everything more. It's nice what Habitat has done, but that's for young couples. If I was to go with Habitat for 30-year mortgage, I'll be 70 years old in July. I'll be dead before the 30 years is up. Then my land that came from my family back and back and back, they would take it with the house.
Uh-huh.
So
who would take the land?
Habitat.
If you get a Habitat house, they have a claim on your land. Is what
right, because you have to pay, I went and checked, you have to pay $500 and something a month, plus flood insurance, plus your other insurance. And so I couldn't afford that either. And then, like I said, I'd be dead before the 30 years is up because I'll be 70 years old in July.
So that's another point you raised. Never mind about Habitat, which a lot of people don't want, the Habitat houses for those reasons you named. If you rebuild a house, even if I gave you the money to build a house, it's more expensive now because you got to have flood insurance, you got to have other things, you got to have special requirements
right.
You're not allowed to just take your chances anymore like it was. Now you got to pay through the nose for the right to live where you used to live before.
Right. You're right.
That's changed, in other words.
Yeah, everything's changed.
And do you think, you're 70 years old, you say?
I'll be 70 in July.
Well, I'm going to be 60 in April. I can't stand it. I don't know how you can stand it, but I guess what is the alternative, right?
Right.
But do you think this is fair? I mean, when you think as an individual how they've handled the recovery process and look at the obstacles you're facing, is this fair that these kinds of requirements are imposed upon you?
No, I don't think it's fair.
And do you think that's the general feeling around here about people?
I think majority of the people feel the same way I do and the same way that this lady does.
Okay. And let's pass the microphone along to Greg, and thank you, and we'll come back to you in a moment. Greg, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you, Jerry.
Well, we're very glad to have you here, Greg. Tell us your story.
Well, when Hurricane Katrina hit, my life changed. I own my own land, my own property, which didn't cost me to live on, but my electric bill and my taxes, which I had homestead exemption. So my taxes weren't very much. At least they were enough I could afford to work them. And I, too, was injured before Katrina and with a back injury, which put me out of work. And I've basically been getting by on however I can to get by.
Are you on disability?
I've been trying to get on disability, and
it's hard.
It's a fight.
That's right. I know that. That's all true around everywhere in the country. That's true.
I've been turned down 3 times.
Yep.
For any number of reasons. I really feel like I'm a refugee in my own country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're down here. We're trying our best to go forward. Unlike some of the other people here on the panel, I've gone ahead and used the money that was given to me to build my home.
Okay.
I'm at the point of finishing the inside, and the vinyl just went up this week. But all that help came from church groups. There wasn't no government that came down and helped me. It was church groups. Lakeshore Baptist Church, the Mennonite people came down and helped me frame up my house, and I had to go up. So any amount of savings that I had was burned up putting my house up.
Let me ask you, Greg. I've asked this of a lot of people, but not on the air. So I'm going to ask you on the air. If you had to say what percentage of the rebuilding of homes, obviously not the bridges and things, the Mennonites didn't do the bridge across the bay, but what percentage of the rebuilding of homes that you've seen in this area has been done by the government, and what percentage has been done by these volunteer church groups and other volunteer groups, how would you stack that out?
I would basically say about 95% of the building has been done by church groups.
And is there anybody on this panel who would have a different figure than that? Sergeant?
I'd say it is about 80-20.
80-20?
Yeah, and basically the cities have been more keen to rebuilding the casinos and the commercial district to get their tax base back, as opposed to bringing back the population, which in Waveland, I ran across something on the internet 2 years ago, I think it was, Miss Lily Stoller was stomping for votes, and she said in her thing, quoting, "We need to do whatever we can to bring our citizens back," unquote.
Well,
I'm like, well, hello.
Yeah, right, and there's a lot of people who aren't back yet, period, right? And that's one reason we don't really know the death count from Katrina, because they think, you know, well, some of those people moved, but really where they may have moved is into the middle of the Gulf. We don't really know how many people moved away and how many people perished. The death estimates from Katrina, some people say, could be a third of what they actually were.
That's possible, and, you know, after the storm, I was down here as a first responder also, and I was involved in body recovery and everything else, and I was on the Kmart parking lot in Waveland. Got in trouble by my supervisors for being homeless and giving the Army a bad image, you know, on the parking lot. What is a soldier doing on the parking lot? Was basically brought back to my unit.
You were in uniform. They didn't want you in uniform there doing
correct,
that.
Correct. And I was brought back to my unit, and we were put out on the airfield to pick up fiberglass insulation that had blown out the buildings. And I went off on the mental health officials there. Mm-hmm. Told them I had a problem with that. And the rest of it, we were loading helicopters with food, water, ice, and as fast as they could come in, we were sending them back out. I've got some video here that I'm going to leave you. Images of the Katrina, the volunteers that came in, and the National Guard's response, trying to help the people. And basically, the volunteers have really saved everybody down here.
Yeah, you've got the lowest estimate of anybody, because everybody I've talked to, you know, 80% done by the volunteers, and everybody else says maybe 90, 95, or 100. But even if it's only 80, people of Mount America must understand the perception on the Gulf Coast is that as far as rebuilding or helping people with their homes, the government has done next to nothing. People down here, they're waiting to have a help from a church group, the greatest national disaster in the history of this country. People are waiting on the church groups because the government just is missing in action. That's what people on the Gulf Coast think. That is the shocking reality. We have a caller on the line. I hope the caller is still there. It's Pat from Brooklyn on the line. Do I have Pat from Brooklyn?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Pat. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
I thank you very much. Yes, I'm here in Brooklyn, and someone gave me the marathon that which a lot of people is not aware of, and I'd just like to bring to your attention that in Brooklyn, the homeless situation is out of control, and this is a situation wherein the district attorney here in Brooklyn, D.A. Charles Hines, the court system, the New York City Police Department, the Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the public advocate, Betsy Gosbaum, the Attorney General, who was Elliot Spitzer, who is now Andrew Cuomo, and the Governor Patterson, they are all aware of what's going on, and they all have closed their eyes to the fact that what is happening in the court system is criminal. I'd just like to tell you my story. I lived in University Towers in Fort Greene. It was converted. It's as a rent-stabilized tenant for over 26 years. And my landlord, Michael Rothenberg, who's a legal agent for University Towers Associates.
We don't need the names here, but just tell us your story. It's okay.
What happened is they converted the apartment building to co-ops, and I remain a rent-stabilized tenant. And on January 28th of 2005, while I was away from my home, it was very cold, almost over 22 inches of snow on the ground. A marshal from Queens by the name of Bruce Frankenberg came to Brooklyn and changed the locks and gave the keys to two people who were not my landlord.
So, Pat, if I understand correctly, you were locked out of your apartment because the building had gone co-op and you were in a rent-stabilized thing, so you were no longer profitable for that landlord at that point.
Correct. And he has been doing that to a lot of tenants.
And where are you living now, Pat?
Where I'm living now...
We lost Pat. I don't know what happened, so I'm sorry. But I will tell you folks around the country, what is the common denominator between the situation that someone like Pat is in and so many other people are in and the people down here is something happens, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be Hurricane Katrina, and the help just isn't there. That's the reality we report on year after year after year after year on this broadcast. Now, let's go around again. Sergeant, if you were running the relief program down here, what would you have done different? What would you be doing different right now?
Well, I wouldn't be making it so hard for the volunteers coming in to get things accomplished. There's been a lot of things and roadblocks put up for them. Also, the monies were very badly handled by government and the different organizations. A lot of FEMA and MEMA personnel... And, you know, there are a lot of good ones, too, so I hate to lump them all together. But their jobs depended upon the money that was coming down. And it came down, and it trickled down, and the further it came down to maintain their jobs and their salaries, you know, it was paid to them. And by the time it got to the people that needed it, needed the homes, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have the funding for that. You know, you have to come back later. So.
And I see, Nora, that you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I want to... Is this thing on?
Yes, it is.
I wanted to say something about that. Like I said, I'm still in a FEMA trailer, and I was promised a MEMA cottage.
Uh-huh.
They come and check my land and everything, where they was going to put it. Then they said I needed a well. So I got a well put down, and I have a septic tank. And then all of a sudden, they stopped it. Now they lined up on Highway 90 and Lakeshore Road, and they was going to sell them to contractors, and then the contractors was supposedly going to fix up a little and sell them back to the people way more money. Why couldn't these MEMA cottages, why couldn't we have them that have our own land that would help us too?
There's so much to absorb. Let me tell the people around the country what you're talking about. Some explain it a little more. Highway 90 is the coastal highway, first of all. So if you're on Highway 90, if you were on the coast side of Highway 90, the south side, you were right in the blast of Katrina. That's kind of like you were in the blast of Katrina on the north side too, but that's it. You were finished if you were on the south side of 90.
It mostly came right into Wavering.
Well, I don't know why your mic isn't on.
I don't know. It's not.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
All right. It hit the eye hit in Waveland. It hit all along the Gulf Coast, but it hit in Waveland.
And they did take hundreds of MEMA cottages that were still habitable, and they were going to auction them off
right. And
let people buy them. And then the people who were going to buy them might have been contractors who were going to sell them back to people here instead of just letting the people who were in them have them, right?
Right.
That's what
right. You're
referring to.
Right.
And nobody, I mean, there's no way for me to explain that to the people at home because I don't think anybody understands it. What were they thinking, right?
I have no idea what they're thinking, but I still think that the people that have their land, that would help, that if they got a MEMA cottage, that's better than sleeping in a tent or being on the street.
You know, those MEMA cottages, except for the ones some were contaminated, they're very nice structures. They're pretty. They're nice.
Well, inside where your electricity panel is, it says it's a module home. It says it'll go up to 150 miles an hour winds. There's a lot of houses won't even take 150 miles.
No, everything has to be built down here now. We know that now.
Right.
Okay, we have Keith on the line from Taos, New Mexico. Those numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8. Or if you're homeless, afraid you're going to be homeless, formerly homeless, you can also call in at 866-LEFT-OUT. Keith from Taos, you're currently homeless. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Keith.
Thank you so much. I was real excited about seeing this on TV. I just ended being homeless this afternoon. I'm actually finally getting off the streets again. And I've been homeless four times. And it's generally been for health reasons that I end up losing my my home. And in this case, I'm also happened to be, when Katrina happened, I'm a answer the phones for a group called Food Not Bombs.
Oh, great group. We've worked with them many times.
That's so cool. Yeah, I'm one of the founders of Food Not Bombs. I helped start the first group in Boston.
Is this Keith McHenry? Is that who I'm talking to?
Yeah, this is Keith McHenry.
Well, Keith, it's an honor to have you on the show. You've founded an organization that has hundreds of chapters, I guess, now.
Yeah, I think it's around 1,000 chapters is what people are estimating. And I was, the Katrina effort was very interesting. We thought that we would go down and help, like the Red Cross and FEMA, feed people, but when we got there, we ended up feeding FEMA, and we had our first bus was in New Orleans on from Hartford, Connecticut. Dan and a crew got down there the day after Katrina, and we had to make like a letter that we posted in our buses that we wrote ourselves, giving ourselves permission to go down and help people. And we were surprised that the Red Cross gave out our number as the official number for people wanting food.
Because that's it. The volunteer group was doing more than the government. That's the story down here, up and down the coast. Dorothy, you wanted to say what to Keith?
Yes. I just want to say, if I was a relief worker coming into dealing with the drastic as Katrina or any storm, you have to look at the whole assessment of the situation that's happening in areas, Waveland, Gulfport, Pass Christine. As I mentioned, all have been hurt by this storm. But if you don't come in a community and do an assessment of what the needs are, we are one of the richest nation in the United States. All the money that came into this area for this storm, there should not be increasing homeless. There should not be people dying in formaldehyde trailers. There should not be temporary housing. Money should be put in affordable and living housing and putting people back into the situation where they were and even better. You look at the people at the top, and this is where the money is.
Yeah, we set up kitchens in 20 cities in the Gulf region because it was such a, people focus on New Orleans, which was really incredibly tragic. And the other thing we discovered was that people, the increase in homelessness across the United States at all of our meals was dramatic after Katrina because people fled the area but still didn't have places to live. And so we found that the numbers increased dramatically. And even, we have another project called Homes Not Jails, which we've been doing where we take abandoned buildings and we get people off the streets. And that's really, really growing. There's like Homes Not Jails website. There's a Food Not Bombs. FoodNotBombs.net is another website. And we have 500 kitchens in the United States and another 500 outside. And I think people might have seen what's going on with like even countries like Iceland, where they are having huge economic problems. So our chapter there has been really central in that. And we're just seeing homelessness increasing everywhere where we're at. And, this is really, really tragic. And I know that I saw some numbers recently where they were saying that 22% of the children going to school in public schools in Arizona were homeless. And in Michigan, it was as much as 32% of the children going to public schools were living on the streets. And this was is a huge increase from what's been going on before. And so we're really urging people like to organize in like either meet with the local Food Not Bombs chapters to help and people on the streets. That's like you are involved. You're invited to be involved with our local chapters. This isn't something where it's house people are participating in. This is everybody, including people who are living on the streets who might be watching this program. You're invited to take part in being one of the cooks and the volunteers with a local Food Not Bombs chapter in your community.
And I know that a lot of homeless people actually do work with you, even though they're the ones who are the most in need. Keith, I think the sergeant here wants to say something. Hang on a second.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, Keith, hang on.
Yeah, Keith, yeah. I appreciate all your help, too, and coming down and volunteering. And I can relate to some of your stories previously because when I first got down here and was stuck on the Kmart parking lot in Waveland being in uniform, I had people coming up to me saying, okay, great, where's our help? You know, and they thought I was the Red Cross or something. And I'm like, no, I'm homeless too now. And I wound up coordinating with another National Guard unit and feeding about 100 people on a Kmart parking lot for about a week until the Red Cross and everybody else got down there and FEMA and the other units. I coordinated and made trips with a basket, gathering MREs, ice, and water, and distributing it out. And I found a guy that his foot had gone septic, and he had been trying to clean up his property. And he was just fading in and out of consciousness. And I flagged down an ambulance and got him on the ambulance. And they asked, was there anybody else in need of anything? And I went around and got names, illnesses, medication needs, and everything else, turned it into them. They said, oh, we can't handle this. They turned it into hire, which eventually got a mobile experimental military hospital brought down from North Carolina. This was the first time it was used. It was set up there on the parking lot in Waveland, Kmart. And they actually did a heart surgery there, I believe, and also delivered a baby there during that.
So, well, no. The Veterans for Peace, they had they worked with us in Waveland. And that was, Waveland was our eastern rendezvous point. So any of the Food Not Bombs groups coming down from New England and Florida, the southeast, were to meet in Waveland at this food program that we had set up there with Veterans for Peace. And that was really wonderful working with them, is to work with the vets in Waveland. And boy, the need was huge there, that's for sure.
Keith, I'm so sorry to hear that you're homeless now. And do you have any prospect of getting back into housing?
Yeah, actually, I think I will be able to move into something either tomorrow, I believe. So fortunately, I actually travel a lot on speaking, to colleges and everything, and so I kind of live on the road. But would be nice to come home to a home. That would be pretty cool.
Well, Keith, I want to thank you so much for the call, and I just want to say, people ask me if this isn't depressing kind of work to do, and I always say no. I get to meet the best people, and you get to see the heart of America. And I think someone like you, Keith, the thousand groups that you've inspired, what the sergeant was talking about, the church groups, what you see is this great outpouring. Whatever is holding our country back, it's a failure of its leadership. It's not a failure of the people. And it's really important that the public understand that, because this is still a great country in its spirit. I'm not talking about its military might. And you certainly are an inspiration, Keith, and we thank you very much for the call. At the microphone we have...
Mona.
Norma?
Mona.
Mona. Hi, Mona. Well, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Mona. And you are from...
Biloxi.
Biloxi, well, we thank you so much for being here. Tell the listeners about your situation.
Well, my situation happened before Hurricane Katrina started. I was homeless before then, and I have recently lost a deceased boyfriend named Steve Nasosis. And for the last 3 or 4 years, they've been having a memorial service down in Town Green in Biloxi, kind of going from Hard Rock. And I finally went to it last year, and the guy behind me, Mark Matthews, we've been together almost 3 years this October.
Okay, people can't see that there's a gentleman standing behind you, but congratulations on having a nice relationship. Go ahead.
And I've been homeless ever since, and say my first rodeo being homeless, because I've been homeless for the last 14, 15 years on and off, because I've been staying with my parents, my sister, out on the street to Biloxi. And
so you were homeless before Hurricane Katrina?
Yes, I was.
And what happened afterwards for you?
Well, afterwards, I went to Florida for a few months, came back, and my dad passed away almost 3 years ago. And that's the only reason why I'm homeless again, because of that. You know, it ain't by choice. It's...
But Mona, you're saying that you were kind of barely getting into housing sometimes, so it didn't take much to push you back out of it, is what you're saying.
Right.
And now, I have heard this, I don't know if this applies to you or not, that it certainly has happened around the country, that when there's a disaster, an earthquake or something, and the Red Cross comes in, the people who had been homeless before, they won't let them get the aid, because they say, well, you were already homeless. And I know there was some of that around here. Did you experience anything like that?
Yes, I have.
And tell me how that happened.
Well, let me see. When they asked me, have I been homeless before, and I told them yes, and asked me, have I got aid, and I told them, yeah, over in Florida, and they told me I wasn't qualified for the funds because I already had funds through American Red Cross.
So it's really, people must understand, when you're down here, this isn't like Santa Claus who only asks if you've been good or you've been bad. This
right.
is like, they want to know what your income was and where you were living, and you got to qualify 16 ways to Sunday in order to get any aid down here.
Correct.
Except from the volunteer groups, that is.
Right.
So where are you living now?
I live out in the woods.
Okay. And it gets cold down here in Mississippi.
In tent. Yes, it does.
People don't know that. I didn't know that. It gets too cold down here in the winter.
And, by the way, Mayor A.J. Holloway of Biloxi thinks ain't no homeless in Biloxi, but there is. There's at least over 300 of us.
Now, there's no shelter in Biloxi. I think
no,
there's one
not.
Little religious one that's kind of a weird one.
No.
But so you think there's like several hundred people living in the woods or around in Biloxi?
About that.
Okay. And were they all people, to your knowledge, you must meet them, were they all people who were homeless before? Or do you think a lot of these people who are in the woods are homeless because of Katrina?
Most of them came from out of town because they heard that Biloxi had work and all this. And come to find out, there ain't hardly no work but temp servers. And they're not hardly putting people out through able body.
I see. And are there good paying jobs? Could you right now, Mona, if you wanted to get a good paying job?
If I want to have a good paying job, yeah, through Blue Rivage Casino. But right now, I'm trying to get my disability started.
What is your disability?
Mental and health.
I see. So it would be hard for you to work.
Right.
There might be jobs out there. And what do they pay at the Beau Rivage for a starting job?
$8.75 an hour.
So that's the definition of a good paying job as far as you're concerned.
Right.
Is $8.70. You might be able to get that.
Right.
And I've heard that they're hiring a lot of Latin American workers at the Beau Rivage.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of Latin and Mexican and all that.
I'm not talking about people who are Hispanic people living here now, but that they're bringing people in,
yeah,
rather than hiring
from
the locals.
From Jamaica and all that.
Right. Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to say, Mona, before we move on?
No. If my sister Emily is listening, hey, Paula.
Hey, and well, tell me one last thing, Mona. What are your prospects now? You're hoping to get disability, and if you get the disability...
I'm on a waiting list through Back Bay Mission trying to get a furnace apartment.
Okay, so that's what it is. It's a matter of a waiting list for you right now.
Right.
Did they tell you how long you have to wait?
No, I didn't.
But it could be a while, you're afraid.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing that story with us, Mona. Those numbers to call in again are 877-NOBODY8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have Thomas from Chorus Gold, California on the line. Thomas, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you very much. I'm very outraged, and I've been for many years as a African-American, 51-year-old, who's somewhat politically aware. I'm a veteran. I lived in Florida up until 05, and it was the hurricanes that ran me out of there because I could see it wasn't going to be a place where I needed to be for any longer than I could possibly be there. I had a good job, so I left the best-paying job for the longest period that I've had in my life because I saw this stuff coming just for the whole hurricane region.
Thomas, let me tell you something, by the way. I believe we are the only broadcast, the only national broadcast that did a story on homelessness after hurricanes before Katrina hit, based on what you're talking about in Florida, because they got hit the year before with four hurricanes.
There you go.
Just goes to show you that if you look at the life from the perspective of all the nobodies who are getting crushed by things, you can learn a lot more than you do if you just look at what's happening to the rich people. So, you know, media should have paid more attention, because people like you already knew that this was a problem.
Exactly, and... it's been a problem long before hurricanes are just one tip of a huge problem that has to do with what I have termed, and probably I didn't make the term up, but I've adopted it, economic slavery, which is all about classism and, you know, the elitist and the power brokers running the world, not just our country. And I'm so glad for public radio because it's the one forum that I've found that speaks to it on a regular basis, and unfortunately enough people aren't paying attention. I do live in a wonderful housing situation at this time, but essentially I'm a homeless person from the time I left Florida.
You're crashing with someone? Is that what you're doing?
I'm essentially a caretaker and a pet sitter.
Okay, but you got to, right now, but how you don't have a permanent situation.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like it's open-ended, you know, it's working out well. So I'm in one of the better situations of a so-called homeless person, but it doesn't leave me any less the aware of, and when I hear, you know, other people's stories, it just makes me count my blessings all the more. But,
okay.
You know,
but you're here to say that you saw this coming. You were in Hurricane Alley in Florida, and you knew that that was an unstable situation for a poor person right then.
Exactly. And I left the best-paying job of my adult life. You know, haven't been able to get gainful employment because I'm living in a mountain-depressed area. So I basically became, you know, like I relate very much to what one of the other speakers said, basically feel like a refugee in my own country.
Yeah.
And I know that that is the larger portion of the population, especially since the last Bush administrations, you know, and that was just re-entrenched to its deepest level that I've seen in my life.
Well, everybody on this panel, which is, if you're not watching it on Free Speech Television, which is channel 9415 of the Dish Network, if you're listening on the radio and you have the Dish Network, you could actually see us. But for those of you who couldn't see, everybody on the panel, when you reiterated that point, they're all nodding their heads. You know, it's like we're not really all like Americans here. If we, you know, I think Woody Guthrie wrote a song, if you don't have the do, re, mi, you know, and that's
exactly.
Unfortunately the way it is. We thank you very much for the call, Thomas.
Can I say one more thing?
Quick, sure.
One thing that haven't heard anybody say, I said economic slavery, it's also a racism issue.
Well, that's an interesting question, which we'll get into more, but thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Greg, I want to ask you, what are the obstacles for you to getting back on your feet right now?
Well, right now, my house is on its way up. It will. The lease on my cottage was up before I've got my elevation grant money coming in.
Now, let me stop you because people just don't know what you mean. An elevation grant means you now have to get your house up off the ground here. Some people wonder if this is even a wise policy because maybe the stilts are going to break, but nobody really knows about that. But they now are requiring houses to be elevated to different, some up even above 20 feet if you're in the worst zone where you'd be exposed to a storm. And MEMA will pay for 5'7", even though some people are required to elevate it higher. So that's what an elevation grant is.
My house is built up 22'6" above sea level.
Wow.
To get back up on my feet, my disability would have to come in, or I could get a job. And I've been a welder by trade all my life. I'm also a Navy veteran.
Uh-huh.
I served my country, came out, and with the trade. I've worked in shipyards most of my life, and I've been paid well. But when Katrina knocks the wind out of you, you know, it took everything I had. And left me to start all over again.
So you're saying...
And I'm 52 years old.
You're saying you were somebody who had had a working life. You had built up some assets for yourself. You're not somebody who... Wait a minute, I'm not against it. We're here to help the poor. But, I mean, there are people who've been here. They were homeless before Katrina, but you were not one of them.
No, I wasn't.
And a lot of people were in your shoes. They were doing fine, and then they just got knocked to pieces by that storm, just like their houses.
Well, they say that Katrina hit us with 20 megaton... The power of 20 megaton bomb hitting us. And I was there watching it when it came over top of us. So, yeah, I'll guarantee you, it was every bit of that.
I'm telling you folks out there, you have to be down here to drive around. You'd think down here on the Gulf Coast, they had the greatest urban planners that anybody ever saw. Why all of these green spaces, all these empty spaces for kids to play, not so overcrowded. You think they planned it to the best. But the actual urban planner down here was Hurricane Katrina. It just wiped out so much. You have to see it to believe it. How much is not here 3.5 years later? The figure I get from people when I talk to them, Well, you know, people say, and you can tell me, panel, if you think I'm right, but what people have told me is maybe 20 or 30% rebuilt. That's what people seem to think. Is that about what sound about right to you folks?
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
No, nobody's thinking that, like, you're almost back to normal down here, right?
We are far from being normal.
Yeah.
Well, when you've got two cities, Bay St. Louis and Waveland, and they have one grocery store, Super Walmart.
Between them.
Between them. What's wrong with that?
With that picture. Well, yeah, I mean, that's right. And, I mean, for all those people around the country who think Walmart, we don't want it in our community, around here, it's thank God for Walmart because there'd be nothing else.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm not saying taking sides on that one. I'm not a big fan of Walmart, but that's the reality. Around here, you got Walmart and you got nothing. That's your choices, you know.
You got Walmart or Walmart.
That's it. That's what you got. Okay, let me quickly take a call. Michael from Northern California, are there?
I am.
Welcome, Michael. What's on your mind? What would you like to contribute to this discussion?
Well, thank you very much. I think you got a great discussion going. I really feel terrible for those people,
you know,
that have all that going on. But there's different kinds of homelessness as well as different kinds of disasters. And our society is set up to cater to 200,000 and up income levels.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, not all those people, but a lot of times people feel when they're up there, well, the heck with those other guys, or they'd be like me. They'd be successful like me and make all my money. And I was executive for 25 years, had my own small business, did okay, raised my kids. But the wife wanted to be with somebody else. It was a stress job. I sold it for half. Went to Hawaii, lived on the beach, a van, worked every day, played music at night. But at $8 an hour, couldn't afford a place, met a lot of other people, so many different ones. This is so huge all over the world, but all over the United States.
That's right.
And it comes from the fact that you can't even, with your wonderful...
Yep. Do we still have Michael? Okay, we lost Michael. I'm sorry, but thank you, Michael, because he's exactly right. Before we move on, I mean, we're coming out of time, but I want to say something about racism. It's interesting to me. There's a lot of things to be said about that. But I had this almost word for word, the same phrase said to me by black people in New Orleans and white people in Alabama. So I know it's not just about race, and it was chilling. They said to me, they don't want us here anymore. That's what I was hearing. Greg, you're nodding?
That is definitely correct. They, I don't know if you're aware of it, but I introduced in Congress a couple of years back, there was, I believe, a senator from Minnesota, I'm not sure, but they made a bill that if you did not make over $50,000 a year, you could not live within 50 miles of the coast. Now, it was shot down immediately, but it was introduced.
It was crazy, but nonetheless, somebody even had the gall to propose it. I never heard that before. Dorothy, we're going to have a lot of African-Americans on this show, but you're the only one on this panel. So let me ask you, you're going to be our race expert for the moment from the African-American point of view. You're a Mississippian. How much of what's going on down here do you think is about wealth against poverty, class, and how much do you think it has to do with race? Do you feel that because you're an African-American, it's especially difficult for you, or is it just the same for everybody if you're poor down here?
Well, I think because I am an African-American, I am a female, I am disabled person, and I'm on a low income, and also where I live at. Like I said, I live on the north side of the track versus the south side of the track. So it all is racist. And race and color and gender and income and wealth all has to play in part with that. That is why the assessments and the determination as to what money, federal monies, are coming into the areas. Some receive, some did not. And it was determined based on those things. Yes, it is racist.
But it isn't just race is what you're saying. It's a lot of things are influenced.
No, it's not just race. But like I'm saying, when it comes to how the people that was affected, it just happened to be a lot of African-American and other people of color because they were in the low-income bracket because they're not, wasn't living in the antebellum homes.
Right.
That is what happened.
Of course, and the Vietnamese shrimpers and people like that because
the Vietnamese,
traditionally
yes.
These were people who were poor to begin with.
Correct.
So therefore, of course, you got hit hard. But Again, I want to say this isn't like the Civil War or the Civil Rights Movement. This problem was not just made in Mississippi. It was made out in the ocean. It was made in Washington. I've come to love this part of Mississippi, much to my own surprise. These are wonderful people, and they've been through hell. So I sure don't want this to just be about picking on Mississippi. But that's not to say there aren't problems down here. We just have time for everybody to say a quick last word. 1 second. You know, Greg, start with you.
I'd just like to take the opportunity to tell our new president that this is long from being over down here.
Okay.
This is long from being over.
Well, I tell you what, that's pretty much going to have to be about the last word.
You are listening to the Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with Community Radio WQRZ of Waveland, Mississippi. The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating and affiliated radio stations. To order CDs of this broadcast or to contact the Homelessness Marathon, go to homelessnessmarathon.org.